You are bathed in radio waves, TV broadcasts, probably telepathic messages, from other minds deep in thought.
Listening to the radio at the same time.
And this radio simply makes audible something that you thought was inaudible.
Yes, sir, it's your boy, Big Vern. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. You heard?
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we will hear from Peter Lavina, the New York State co-chair of the Green Party of New York, discussing the recent state budget, including the issues about taxing the rich, education, the carbon tax, excluded workers, marijuana reform, and single-payer health care. We'll also speak with Christina Sutherland, a HUD-certified housing counselor, talking about the different programs the Affordable Housing Partnership has available for people trying to purchase a home in Albany County, and the Homeowners Virtual Fair coming up April 10th. We'll also hear about Albany's efforts to ban tear gas, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
WGXC vibrate on and keep essential radio on your 90.7 FM frequency. And at WGXC.org, wavefarm.org/listen, there's many ways to tune in. You can use the TuneIn app. You can tune in on your phone, your computer, your tablet, or your transistor radio. Please consider making a sustaining support pledge. $5 monthly pledge, just 17 cents a day, will keep the radio vibrating on at 90.7 FM, keeping community voices on the air. Make a pledge today at wgxc.org/donate.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's how you cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC local news. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acra. David Figueroa is reporting for NewYorkUp.com that legislation included in the newly approved state budget will allow youths aged 12 and 13 to hunt deer with a firearm or crossbow under the supervision of an experienced adult hunter. The measure includes a couple of conditions in the pilot program that takes effect June 1st and continues through December 31st, 2023. 8 downstate counties were excluded in the legislation: the Bronx, Kings County, Nassau, New York, Queens, Richmond, Suffolk, and Westchester counties. Upstate, each county must pass a local law to allow the new regulations to take effect within its boundaries. The DEC will engage in education and outreach to communities with details of the pilot program. Counties may choose to opt in at any time, according to a statement released by the department this week. At present, the minimum age for a junior hunter to hunt deer and bear with a firearm or crossbow with adult supervision is 14. The minimum age for junior hunters to use a bow to hunt big game is 12. Under the new law, young hunters must be supervised by experienced and licensed hunters, age 21 or older, at all times. Both hunters are required to remain on the ground. The new regulations originally included allowing the young hunters to hunt from a tree stand. Both items were eliminated during the budget negotiation process. Read more about this story at nyup.com. Larry Rullison is reporting in the Times Union that the city of Albany is now looking into creating its own internet service. Mayor Kathy Sheehan is creating a 5-person commission on municipal internet service to look at the feasibility of starting a city-owned high-speed internet service modeled after the municipal internet service offered by Chattanooga, Tennessee. There, residents get internet service that reaches download speeds of 1 gigabyte per second for $67.99. The Tennessee city claims $2.7 billion in economic benefits over the past decade because of the cheap, reliable service. Quote, creating high-speed, reliable, affordable, and citizen-owned internet service has shown to be a major economic boost in municipalities where such infrastructure exists, unquote. Sheehan's office says in a posting seeking members for the new board who would serve 2-year terms. Quote, providing this service would also serve as a significant benefit in every neighborhood in Albany, particularly in neighborhoods where unemployment and poverty rates are high, unquote. Major internet providers have banded together to get states to pass laws against municipalities offering their own internet service after Chattanooga's success with public internet service. Now there's a new bill in Congress, quote, to prohibit a state or political subdivision thereof from providing or offering for sale to the public retail or wholesale broadband internet access service, unquote. Read more about the story in the Times Union. Clarence Fanto is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle. Details of the 2021 Tanglewood Festival in Lenox, Massachusetts were announced this week. The lineup for the Boston Symphony Orchestra's shortened 6-week season from July 9th to August 16th this year includes an extensive schedule of events in the open-air shed and lawn. Audience capacity will be limited based on state and federal guidance. Boston Symphony Orchestra director Andrus Nelsons will conduct 8 orchestral performances during the first 3 weekends of the season, paying tribute to Ludwig van Beethoven and spotlighting new music by 18 living composers. Film composer-conductor John Williams will appear twice, including the world premiere of his Violin Concerto No. 2, performed by violinist Anne-Sophie Mutter on July 12th, and again on his traditional film night, August 13th. Boston Symphony Orchestra president and CEO Mark Volpe said about the plan for the festival going forward, quote, right now we're taking a conservative course, providing a safe environment for our patrons. We just couldn't envision another virtual Tanglewood, so having people back, albeit in more modest numbers, was a critical, significant step forward, unquote. The Boston Symphony Orchestra stands to lose $2.5 million to $3 million on the limited capacity season, Volpe said. He added that there will be a fair number of tickets available for every concert, including high-profile attractions, when the general public sale begins after a few weeks of advance sales to donors. The season will include performances and master classes by cellist Yo-Yo Ma and pianist Emmanuel Ox, the Knights Apollo's Fire, and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with Wynton Marsalis. Ticket sales begin 10 a.m. May 17th at tanglewood.org, or you can call 888-266-1200. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Ewan Palmer is reporting for Newsweek that a number of cities nationwide are preparing for potential far-right, quote, White Lives Matter, unquote, marches the afternoon of April 11th. The rallies are being coordinated by extremists on social media and via the encrypted messaging app Telegram. Dozens of events were planned to occur at 1 p.m. at various locations, including New York, Fort Worth, and Chicago. Details of the events are minimal. Many of the dedicated channels for marches have a few subscribers and barely any discussion. No one is predicting anything as highly attended as the, quote, Unite the Right, unquote, march in 2017 that attracted neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan, and far-right extremists in Charlottesville, Virginia. Kathy Wheel is reporting for the Daily Beast the event was staged to look like a grassroots coalition expressing far-right anger, but the so-called White Lives Matter movement is secretly being organized by a coalition of Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and other far-right figures. Some of the planned Sunday marches were canceled, but others are expected to continue as planned. Among them are rallies in North Carolina and North Dakota, where activists on the left have announced counter-demonstrations. It is unknown if the White Lives Matter rallies are planned for anywhere upstate this weekend, where the Oath Keepers have a strong presence. Until 2017, the town of Chatham was home to the group's state offices. Following the death of leader John Wallace, those offices moved to the town of Mount Pleasant in Westchester County. This has been the WGXC News. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts showers are likely mainly after 1 p.m. on Sunday. Otherwise, it'll be cloudy with a high near 61. Showers are also possible Sunday night. There's a 70% chance with thunderstorms after 1 a.m. in the forecast and a low around 43. 70% chance of rain on Monday with cloudy skies, a high of 51, and a low around 39 Monday night. Tuesday, again, there's a chance of showers, only a 30% chance this time, but the skies should still be cloudy with a high of 55 and a low around 42 on Tuesday. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Basilica Hudson's annual 24-hour drone they've been holding for the past 7 years is back again this year, although it's reconfigured as Drone at Home 2021 and curated by Basilica Hudson and Wavefarms WGXC. You can watch online on Twitch or listen to a broadcast from noon April 24th till 6 a.m. April 25th. And tune in, you'll hear the Canada Resonance Agency, Maria Chavez, Brian DeWan, and Ross Goldstein performing together, the Drones Not Drones Collective, Lamont Hamilton, Inter Air with Matt Luzak and others, Les Guess Who, The Lumen Project, Nerf B Radio with Johnny Farrow, Anna Fritz, Stephen Germana, Jeff Kolar, and Peter Spear, and also Chloe Alexandra Thompson performing. That's the Drone at Home, broadcast live on WGXC April 24th from noon to 6 a.m., and watch on Twitch at Basilica Hudson April 24th.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Laura Kuhn of Millbrook, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
2 weeks, 14 days, 326 hours. Every second that your family could be exposed to radiation after a nuclear attack. Radiation that kills.
To survive, a fallout shelter is a necessity. Equipment and supplies are essential.
Now, Survive All Shelters, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, offers a basic equipment kit with
a Conelrad high-powered radio, transistor-operated for long battery life,
a complete, fully stocked first aid kit,
a heavy-duty fire extinguisher, emergency water containers, a chemical toilet for protection against contamination and disease,
extra-strength Saran and rayon bunks,
a radiation meter and individual dosimeters.
For protection, every second of each hour of every day. See a survive-all shelter now.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Mishuda, 19 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Fatia, and I'm also from Hudson. I'm 7 years old.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate. Bookish things.
And that's what we'll do today. We have so many of us
today.
By the
way, I'm Georgia. I'm also from Hudson.
Oh.
Near Hudson.
Did we skip you? Oh, no. I thought you were gone. We knew you were here. All right. Well, so Georgia is also with us today, and Georgia will also be talking about books.
Yes.
Yay.
Bookish things.
Or bookish things.
And bookish.
Who wants to get us started today?
I guess I'll start.
I've been reading a book for class. It's called Circe. It's by Madeline Miller. And I am really surprised by how much I like it. I usually do not like books that I have to read for class, but I've actually had to struggle not to read ahead for this one. It's very, very good.
What's it about?
So it is about, if you've ever read the Odyssey, there's a point in the Odyssey where Odysseus is stuck on an island with a nymph for a very long time, the nymph named Circe. This is basically a retelling of that, but it is all from Circe's perspective. It talks about her growing up as a daughter of a god, but not really a god herself. Her eventually getting banished to an island where she meets Odysseus. And I am a little more than halfway through it at the moment, and it's very, very good.
That's a nice change of pace, liking something you're reading for school.
Yeah, it is. It is very nice. It's no ragtime, that's for sure.
Yeah. Perhaps it'll be a Great Gatsby.
Or Old Man in the Sea.
Well, no, not Old Man in the Sea.
No. Honestly, Odysseus is more like Old Man in the Sea. The only exciting thing about Odysseus is that there are monsters in it and not just a fish. But no, Circe is very interesting. It's very fun.
Glad you're enjoying that. I've heard good things, but I have not read it myself.
So I guess I'll go next. So after I share my book, I have a little thing that I'd like to show or talk about to radio listeners. So my book is Meg Jo Bethanamy, which is a graphic novel, modern retelling of Little Women. It's nice. It's a very modern take on a classic, and it's very, very, very different from the original, but still has the same kind of core. And it was made to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Little Women. And I like this book because the colors are very bright and the art is very, very satisfying to look at. Just like kind of big shapes, but also have some sort of detail. It's very satisfying. And also the story is just really good. I recommend this for children ages maybe 11, 12, or 13. I'm 10, but I think I like read it when I was 8, and I think I was a little too young for it then. I think I'm probably still a little too young for it, but I still really like it. I think it's good for ages like, actually, I'm not really too young for it anymore. I think it's good for ages 10, 11, 12, 13, like a kind of tween years and early teen. It's a really good book, and I can read the description. Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy are having a really tough year. Not only is their father overseas with the military and their mother working overtime to make ends meet, but each girl is struggling with their own unique problems. Whether it's school woes, health issues, boy troubles, or simply feeling lost, the March sisters all need the same thing, support from each other. By coming together and sharing lots of laughs and tears, these four young women find the courage to discover who they truly are as individuals and as family.
I have a question for you.
Yes?
I think whenever people talk about Little Women, they often ask which sister you relate the most to. Is there a character that you relate the most to in the book or that you like the most?
Well, I've never read the actual book. I think this is very different.
Oh, okay.
But out of this book, it's really hard to choose. I don't really relate to any of them because I haven't really gone through the hard things that they've been through. Mm-hmm. The one I like the most, it's really hard to choose that too. I don't have a least favorite. I don't have a favorite. All of them are equal.
That's nice.
And the thing that I wanted to share or describe for radio listeners is, so I really all of their books just fell off.
Oh no.
But I really, 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 really love Legos. There's a special part called Lego Friends, and I really like Lego Friends. They're just Legos, but they're geared more toward girls because, like, the regular Legos, they have some sets geared toward girls. They just don't. Most of them are geared toward boys. So I really like Lego Friends. And so I made a new room for one of my favorite Lego Friends characters, Olivia. And so she's really smart. So in her room, I'm making a giant bookcase. I made a giant bookcase. I filled it with like pictured Lego tiles, which are really Beat Bits in a Lego video set. Lego videos, it's really complicated to explain on a short time period, but Lego Veo is really fun. Anyways, the Beat Bits from it, I doubled them as books. For any radio listeners who like Lego Veo and Legos, it's really easy. Just double the Beat Bits as books. And so all the Beat Bits are pictured, so they can read all they want. I have 16 Beat Bits, so my Legos have 16 books. And they read a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. Right now, Chloe is reading a book about hip-hop.
Funny. Does Olivia have a favorite book?
Olivia tends to like... I guess she likes the one about... I'm just pretending it's called Beach Story. That's her favorite.
Okay. That's pretty fun. Little things are fun to play with.
Yes, I love little things. I'm the little things queen.
That's really cool. Well, while you're putting together their bookshelf again, maybe we can hear from Mashuda or Fatia.
Oh, I already put it back together. It's so easy.
I have a poem. It's Things You Can Control by Kellum LP Gunners. Things you can control. Your beliefs, your attitude, your thoughts, your perspective, how honest you are, who your friends are, what books you read, how often you exercise, the type of food you eat, how many risks you take, how kind you are to others, how you interpret situations, how kind you are to yourself, how often you say, I love you, how often you say, thank you, how you express your feelings, whether or not you ask for help, how often you practice gratitude, how many times you smile today, the amount of effort you put forth, how you spend, invest your money, how much time you spend worrying, how often you think about your past, whether or not you judge other people, whether or not you try again after a setback, how much you appreciate the things you have. So it's like, that just spoke to me because yesterday I saw a movie and it was a Hindi movie and it was a boy who like was an orphan and he always wanted to be a cricketer, but then because he was an orphan, everyone just made fun of him and always put him down. But then that was his dream to be a famous cricketer. And, you know, then his dream came true because he was always true to himself and he was always nice to others. So his dream just follow along with him because he didn't need to do anything because he's good-hearted, inside and out. And then reading that poem, because, I'm really into poems these days. I don't know why. I'm into poems than books right now. And so it just spoke to me. And, because that's how life is. And you should just let others, negative people, do negative things. And you should just be, yourself. And you should not let others affect you. And because you're just nice, automatically good things will happen to you because you're good and you're doing good to other people. You're not spreading negativity. And so it's just, that was a good lesson. And Fatia is ready.
This book is about insects.
That's called Mini Beasts, right? Cool. Who's on the cover? We've got a ladybug. Ladybugs are so cool looking.
What I don't understand is that there are male ladybugs. I mean, they're called ladybugs. They should all be ladies.
Well, I guess a male person could dress up like a lady. So maybe it's like the ladybug looks ladylike, but maybe even some of the female ladybugs are not ladies or don't identify as ladies. They're like, don't you call me a lady. I'm a ladybug, but I'm not a lady. So what did you want to tell us about the book, Fatia?
This is an outer page. Come on down and meet some creeping.
It's like Tarantula.
I hate those spiders.
You hate tarantulas?
Don't tell me what kind of spiders
it is. I feel bad for tarantulas.
Do you like them?
I do. I wouldn't want to like wake up with one crawling on me, but I think they're really cool looking, and I think they get a bad rap because they're a giant furry spider. Although I don't think they're technically furry, but they look furry.
I'm not going to even touch that page. I touched it. It's like
it's like a life-size tarantula in that book. So I get the tarantula is your least favorite bug in the book. Do you have a favorite bug in the book?
I'm going to check.
Do you like most bugs or do you dislike most bugs? Oh, you like the butterfly?
Yeah, the butterfly bug is my favorite.
Yeah, they're pretty. Oh, that's nice. They're very pretty. And they're helpful. They, you know, spread the pollen.
Is it a snake or something?
No, it's a centipede.
What's a centipede? Is it this?
Centipedes have a lot of legs.
Yeah. Some of them have infinity legs.
That seems like a pretty cool book.
Okay. Because they can sting me everywhere in my head,
I find that bees mostly don't sting. It's only if they feel threatened.
I think honeybees are unrecognized. They're like how you described tarantulas, Emily. They're just nicer.
Yeah.
Wasps are the awful ones. Wasps are terrible. They don't even pollinate anything. They're just angry.
Wasps and yellow jackets.
Yeah. I like the little bees, the little ones. I really like the fluffy ones. The fluffy ones are so cute. But I don't
think those are honeybees.
Wasps. Yeah, those ones. They're just chilling. They don't do anything, and they'll die if they sting you, but wasps can sting you multiple times. For no reason whatsoever.
What's so, up, Fatia?
Fatia wants to talk about like how she learned how butterflies grow.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, because like last year when I was at first grade, I saw a like rainbow, like a what's it called again?
Caterpillar.
Yeah, caterpillars. When the caterpillar was the mama caterpillar laid its eggs. Then we watched for the whole entire day. We each got turns watching this over and over again. And then the caterpillar grows so much, like I was so scared to hold it because I thought it was gonna break me. And then Peyton Rose, she did it.
Yeah, her friend.
Mm-hmm.
And like the teacher hold a caterpillar, then it flied to a different world. I mean, a different.
It flew to a different world.
Yeah,
into a different country.
Probably went to Mexico.
Mexico?
Probably.
I totally forgot. I think so.
I know there's some butterflies that
now I really miss
go to Mexico, but then they make their way back. But I can't remember if the ones that go make it back or if it's their offspring that make it back. That I can't remember. So I haven't studied monarchs in a while.
This one looks exactly like the one. This one. It just looks like exactly like this butterfly.
The one in the book? Looks like the one that you had in school?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I think it is the one.
I think bugs are pretty cool. There's so many different kinds. They all look so different.
You know what bug I'm really creeped out of? Usually I'm fine with bugs. I hate wasps. And yellow jackets, my absolute worst nightmare, praying mantises.
Really? I love them.
I
hate them. And what's so annoying is that since I don't really live, I live in Ghent, about 15 minutes away from Hudson. So we live like no sidewalks or anything, just like grass and stuff. So two times I almost touched a praying mantis. The praying mantis was like 1 foot long both times.
Wait, what? That's really big. I've never heard, oh, a foot?
1 foot.
I don't think they get that big, do they?
It looked that big. It looked like the size, about the size of my head.
Wow. Like, some of them can get pretty large. Most of the ones out in the wild kind of just aren't that big, but they're pretty big bugs. Mm-hmm. I think they're cute.
Oh, and you do not want to know how they have your babies. And I think that cute feeling will fade away once I tell you.
Oh, I know. I know that they're... See, I've talked about this before, and I know praying mantises, I think, are endangered, and I've always thought that, hey, maybe they wouldn't be endangered if all the males didn't die. Like, because the females eat the males. That's what they do.
They don't.
I thought it was that the females... What happens is that the females kill the males, lay its eggs in the male's dead head, and then eat the body.
That's a wasp thing. That's a wasp thing. Wasps are terrible. I told you. Wasps are horrible.
I thought that's what the praying mantises did.
No, no. They'll just eat the father.
I think it's somewhat of a myth. I feel like I've heard to do some research, because I think I read once that there's no proof that that happens outside of captivity, that all of the proof that happens is in captivity. But I don't know if that's true. I just remember reading that at one point.
Maybe they just in desperation.
Yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of animals like undergo like really stressful situations while in captivity, like the orcas in SeaWorld. Back when SeaWorld had orcas, like their fins would tilt, and that was like a sign of stress. I do know, I was told all my life that it is illegal to kill a praying mantis, and that actually is a myth. It's not illegal to kill them. I don't know why you would, but it's not illegal.
It's against the law to kill a bug.
Yeah, I thought it was because it was like really endangered or something, but it is, and it is endangered, but like it's not to that extent where it would be illegal to kill one. I'm not gonna kill them though. They're cute. I love them. They're so good. They eat bad stuff. They're kind of like possums. To the insect world, they are what possums are to the mammal world.
Possums that bug my parents because they eat all the trash.
Possums are really good. They're like immune to a lot of rabies, and they eat ticks, so they're good for the environment. But my mom hates them. My mom is so scared of possums.
Not that my parents are scared of possums. It's because a bunch of possums keep coming and eating our trash before my dad can pick it up. I mean, like, before my dad can pick up the trash bands, like, bags, like, right when he's about to take the trash right out to the trash can, he's just like getting his shoes on because he like left the bags outside to get his shoes on. Then like suddenly a possum walks up and
they like wait for you, huh?
We could talk about animals and bugs and creatures all day, but before we're out of time, I just wanted to share a couple poems because it is National Poetry Month, and like Mashuda, I've been enjoying poetry. And I'm trying to read at least one poem per day for the month of April, since it's National Poetry Month. And so we have a stack of poems at the main desk that people can pick up when they borrow stuff from the library. And I grabbed a couple, and these are all from Poem in Your Pocket for Young Poets. There might be some from the adult version.
Keep a poem in a pocket and a picture in your head, and you'll never feel lonely at night when you're in bed. A million things will
and so on.
Will sing to you. A dozen dreams will dance to you at night when you're lying in bed. I feel like I skipped something. So keep a picture in your pocket and a poem in your head, and you'll never feel lonely at night when you're in bed.
Yay.
I had to memorize the poem 5 years in a row for school.
Wow.
So I know it by heart.
Got it. So this is a different book that doesn't have that poem in it, but Poem in Your Pocket Day is a day in April. I forget the exact date, but I will find that. And the idea is on that day that you're supposed to bring a poem or more around in your pocket and give it to somebody that you come across. Pretty fun. And so this book, Poem in Your Pocket for Young Poets, is filled with poems that are just a sheet that you can fold up pretty easily and put in your pocket. So they're nice and short.
Oh, that's so cool. It's not that good for COVID though.
That's no, that's okay. You can paper airplane it to someone. So I'll read one of my favorites that I probably read on the radio every year. And it is called They Loved Paperclips. It's by Lisa Jarnot. And this is a poem that in the early days of Bound by Books, Quinn and I used to read poems all the time. And we like to try to read this in one breath because it's a run-on sentence. Okay, so I'm going to try. It's called They Loved Paperclips. They loved harmony, they loved anthills, they loved food and cookies and harpoons. They loved the sound of laces of the shoes and snow. They loved the snow on Thursdays and the rain. And when they met, they loved that too, and igloos and the trees and things to mail and chlorine. And they loved the towels for the beach and hot dogs in the pool. And also when the wind rose up, they loved the ceiling and the tide, and then they loved the sky. I didn't make it that time. I took a breath. I'm sorry I failed you. I love that poem. It's just really
That's
fun to
okay.
read.
It's too long to do it in one breath. Don't pressure.
I have done it. It's just I did not take a deep enough breath this time.
The one poem I always think about around National Poetry Month is like The Hollow Men by T.S. Eliot. And it's solely because it is used in probably one of the scariest, most dread-inducing episodes of a children's TV show I've ever seen. And it's if any of you remember R.L. Stein's Haunting Hour, it was like a modern Goosebumps, but it was so scary.
That's cool. Is that a short poem?
It has like five parts, but the part that really matters is the first part, so it's not that long.
Maybe on a
future
episode.
Would you like me to read it? I can read it in a future episode, probably.
Yeah. Why don't you check it out for a future one?
Maybe I can rewatch the episode and see if it's really as scary as I remember it being.
Yeah.
Then talk about that too.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. So I'll read a couple more. So this one is called Metaphors by Sylvia Plath. I'm a riddle in nine syllables, an elephant, a ponderous house, a melon strolling on two tendrils, a red fruit, ivory, fine timbers. This loaf's big with its yeasty rising, money's new minted in this fat purse. I'm a means, a stage, a cow in calf. I've eaten a bag of green apples, boarded the train. There's no getting off. And I'll read one more by Edna St. Vincent Millay called Afternoon on a Hill. I will be the gladdest thing under the sun. I will touch 100 flowers and not pick one. I will look at cliffs and clouds with quiet eyes, watch the wind bow down the grass and the grass rise. And when the lights begin to show up from the town, I will mark which must be mine and then start down. I like that one. It reminds me of spring and being outdoors in the lovely weather. So those are the few that I picked for today. I hope everyone out there reads some nice poems this month too for National Poetry Month, or at least tunes into the radio and hears some on here. Although Amelia's might scare you. Terrifying. Yeah, we're just about out of time for today, but thank you everyone for listening. We hope you have a great week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Bye.
Happy
Bye.
Reading.
Bye.
Bye.
we could make a boat and sneak off to this island. I could bring my little ghetto blaster. There's more to life than this.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Kent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On March 31st, 2021, Governor Cuomo signed into law a bill that will end the use of long-term solitary confinement in prisons and jails in New York State. We are joined by Jerome Wright, statewide organizer from the New York Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement, or CAKE. Jerome is here to tell us more about what has happened with this new legislation. So first, Jerome, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk magazine.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And second, congratulations on your successful campaign. So after years of effort to restrict solitary confinement, isolation for more than 15 consecutive days will be barred in prisons and jails starting next March. Can you react to the recent news and explain why this was able to finally pass now?
My first reaction is relief and gratitude that we were able to get this far. But first, let me say, this is not a campaign victory. This is a people's victory. There were many people all over the state and even out of state who weighed in on helping us to achieve this. So far be it for us to take any credit, this is really was a people's victory. But by the same token, it was a big victory. We definitely changed the entire paradigm of punishment that Department of Corrections used. And we're instituting some rehabilitative and therapeutic measures that will make sure that people come out of there better than they went in. And that was the nexus of this whole thing, to not torture people and not to put our people in cages and leave them there and then hope that when they come out, they were going to be better, which is really like an asinine proposition.
Jerome, you are a survivor of solitary confinement yourself. What does the success of this mean to you personally? And what should our audience know about the impact of solitary confinement?
Well, personally for me, it means the world. It means that I made a vow when I was in there. I did 7.5 years in solitary, most of the time for which something I did not do that was wrong, but because I was advocating against things that were going on that was wrong. So I made a vow that I would not stop until something was done about it. So personally, it's gratifying to know that I had the intestinal fortitude to stick with this and to come out on the other side successful. It's really, you know, to go from somebody who was in that cell to going to be somebody who helped in that practice is monumental. It is something that I will always cherish. It is a lasting legacy for myself. And, you know, it completely changed the trajectory of my life. I am no longer just a person who did some time. I'm somebody who helped redress some of the issues in the system. On top of that, it does something that, you know, never will another pregnant woman be in solitary, which shouldn't have been in the first place. With nobody with a diagnosed mental health issue going solitary, which only exacerbates their health. No, and unfortunately, we can't say that nobody will ever commit suicide or self-harm, but the chances of that happening on the scale that it had been happening is slim to none. And that is a big win. We save lives, we'll save the state some money, and we'll get people healthy. And that's what it's about.
Thank you for that, Jerome. Now, I've read a statistic that in New York State, Black people represent about 48% of the prison population, but about 58% of those are in special housing units. Can you talk about the racial discrepancies in the use of punishment like solitary confinement?
Sure. I was involved in a case in 1990 called Santiago versus Miles. And this case was in federal court where we, as a plaintiff, were disputing the fact that there was such racial tension in Elmira Correctional Facility where the N-word was being used, where disciplinary was being disproportionately visited upon Black and brown people, where even the housing, the good housing was going to white people and the bad housing was all. So this is something, this is a scourge of racism that permeates the entire system. And it's so to think that solitary, one of the worst parts of it, would not feel that is would be just not congruous. And I'm telling you, it's even worse. Think about it. Black people make up only 18% of the entire state population, but almost 50% of them in jail. And then you add almost another 10% to that to solitary. So we criminalize people who have mental health issues that tend to be black and brown. And then we put black and brown bodies in there and don't care what happens to them when we know what the impact is going to be. In the early 1900s, they tried this, putting people in solitary confinement, and it drove people crazy. That's why they stopped it. But they revisited it when black and brown bodies became the prevailing number of people locked up, and it killed and drove a lot of people insane. And that's going to stop now.
In January of 2020, you wrote an op-ed about alternatives to solitary confinement. For those that are critical of this ban, what would you say to them? And can you talk about some of the alternatives that you outlined in that article?
First of all, to critics, I would say, if you've been doing something and it hasn't been working, then why do we continue to do it? Their complaint is that violence is up. And if the way you solve violence being up is putting people in solitary and it continues to go up, I think we found the wrong tool. But the last thing I heard, a tool was tools are used to help repair and heal. This solitary confinement did nothing but harm, hurt, and danger, and endanger people. So using that as a tool was never effective. And the statistics show it's never effective. So why to continue doing it? Because it's something that you can do, or because you have a penchant towards punishment and subjugating people? That's my belief. Do we want people coming out of that experience worse, so they can visit that hurt and that harm on other people and then be the cause for that? We forget about cause and effect in the solitary thing. You put a person away, you treat them like an animal, you leave them there for weeks, months, and years, and then you let them out. What do you expect to get out? That's why HALT is big, because now you know you don't go in there and don't come out worse. You get training, you get education, you get therapy, you get religious service, you get congregate activities with other people so that you can regain your humanity, and you get help, something that nobody was getting.
Thank you for that, Jerome. I, you know, started this interview with the assumption that people know by now on our program what solitary confinement is. But could you just describe it in your own words from your own experience?
I'm going to describe it, and then before we get off, I'm going to play you a soundtrack of what the sounds of solitary is. Because so some people think solitary confinement is just being placed in the same cell that everybody else in. What's the harm in that? Well, first of all, it could be the same cell in circumference, 6x9 average cell. However, in this cell, you have no personal property. You have a bed and a toilet sink contraption. That's it. You're there for up to 23 hours a day with no education, no therapy, no treatment, no religious services, no congregate activities. The people of this country just lost their collective minds when we were held hostage by coronavirus. COVID-19 forced people to socially distance, physically distance, be medically quarantined, isolated in their own homes, and people lost their minds. They had the creature comforts of home with TV, DVD, all of this stuff, games, family, their own food, and still they risked their lives and everybody else's life to get out of that situation because they were going stir crazy. I want you to multiply that exponentially. When you think about being in your own home, but think about being in a space the size of an elevator or a parking space every day, all day, for weeks, months, years, in some cases decades. And you think what would happen to you? Dead before the grace of God, I didn't harm myself. But there's so many people who did, and there's so many people who will continue to do that until this law is enacted. And that's what we got to stop. We got to stop torturing. We couldn't put an animal. You couldn't leave your dog in a cage all day without the ASPCA getting you a fine or locked up. But we do that to human beings every day, men, women, and children. That is wrong. That is why HALT is big. That's why we got to stop solitary completely. But this is just the first step. One of the residual impacts of solitary is that cacophonous, discordant sound of noise all day, every day, banging, screaming, yelling, has made it where I'm like kind of like tone deaf and irresponsive to sound. Like I they don't even let me and my family watch the kids, because if I fell asleep, I wouldn't hear them destroying the house because my senses are so numbed and desensitized. And that's how some of us. That's the sensory part, but emotionally that happens, spiritually that happens, And a lot of times that's when people die a little bit inside.
Jerome Wright, thank you for that. And as we wrap up here, I just want to make sure I give you the last word.
This was a human rights crisis, and human beings stood up together, regardless of race, creed, religion, socioeconomic status, and they all said, this is wrong, and don't do it in my name. There are more things that are wrong with this state and this country that we all need to stand up for. Halt is an example of what can happen when we stand up together. Let's continue to do so.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.